Hey friends, this is Boss Barista. I'm Ashley Rodriguez. I'm honored to have two guests on the show today, Bartholomew Jones and Renata Henderson of Coffee Black. To say that Coffee Black is a coffee roasting company is an understatement. Coffee Black is a brand, an educational platform, a music outlet, an informative podcast, connecting the ancestral history of coffee to modern day. Renata and Bartholomew, who are married and raising two children in Memphis, didn't just aim to start a business, but set off on a mission to impact social change. The coffee plant was stolen from Africa in 1616 by two Dutch spies. 3 years later, the first stolen black bodies landed in Jamestown, Virginia. These two sentences are written on the back of each bag of Guji Mane, an Ethiopian coffee from the Sidama region that Coffee Black sells on their website. In this episode, we talk a lot about intent, history, and self-knowledge. Both Renata and Bartholomew tie their own personal histories and the colonial history of coffee to the current state of the industry, and they challenge how we view and consume coffee today. For so many people, the memories of coffee they have growing up, as an occasion to gather with family and share stories, doesn't match up with what the specialty coffee landscape actually looks like. This episode is about making connections, both the tangible, like what does it mean when the specialty coffee industry doesn't reflect the experience of its members, in particular Black people from who coffee was stolen from, and abstract connections, like how identity and life experience manifest in the art and creative endeavors that we take on. Coffee Black is a creative enterprise, and much of that energy comes from the connection and freedom of expression that Renata and Bartholomew have made together. So here's our conversation.
I didn't know if we needed to press anything, but that's cool. We're live.
Oh yeah, we're live. We're here. We're doing it. Can I have both of you introduce yourselves?
Yeah.
Yes. So I am Renata Henderson. I don't have any cool stage names like my husband, but I do, by day, I work with early childhood centers and train and families, and by any other time of the day, I do calligraphy. I go by Brown Girl Lettering. I am on Instagram. I have a website, but it needs some work, so don't go to it. So yeah, that's me.
Okay, dope. Yeah, and I'm Bartholomew Jones. That's my preferred name. And Renata is my wife, and I consider myself the co-founder of Coffee Black. My wife founded it with me. She's the first one that ever. She was our first investor. She bought my first espresso machine the first Christmas of our wedding.
I invested when we first met too. But we can get back to that.
Yeah, we can talk
it
about that.
It was a $4 investment.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Okay, yeah. Let's go back. Well, let's finish your introduction.
Oh yeah, so I'm an educator, I'm an MC, and I'm a coffee nerd. And so yeah, I really just am excited and passionate about coffee as a means for like eradicating poverty and creating generational wealth in Black families in the diaspora. So yeah, that's what I'm excited about doing.
That's awesome. I'm actually really excited. It seems silly to like say these things while we're on air because we've like spent 20 minutes talking before we even pressed record. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the need to express how excited I am to talk to both of you because I've been listening to the Coffee Black podcast. And it's one of the only podcasts I've listened to more than once that I've had to rewind and be like, wait a minute, hold on, let me write this down. because there's good. So much like good information in there that I don't think it's talked about a lot in coffee. And we'll talk about that definitely. But I want to go back to what Bartholomew, you said earlier about how Renato is kind of like your first investor. So let's talk a little bit about how you two met and how you two coming together kind of inspired Coffee Black or at least helped launch this brand for you.
Yes. So you want to go first or I want to go first?
I don't know. Whatever we do, it has to be abbreviated.
Okay.
So we told the story the other day, and literally it took 3 hours, and I don't think you have space for a 3-hour podcast. Yes.
We could just do like this in like stages. Like we'll just drop like a whole new season. Yeah, it's going to have to be
like bases, like first base, second base. Yeah.
Okay. Long story short, long story short, I met Renata at my first hip hop show after graduating from college. Yeah. And we met, I did my performance. We had both just gotten out of like really kind of toxic relationships. And we're in that stage where people of faith kind of get into where they're like, I just want to focus on God. I don't want to date anyone. Like, I just need
to. Well, he was there. I think I was.
Okay, so she wasn't there. I was definitely like, I just want to focus on God.
I was like, I want to focus on God with a man.
Yeah. I was like, I want to focus on God. I had just graduated, just moved back to Memphis. So I was really big on like, I wanted to change my communities through education and through the arts because I was a hip hop artist. And so that was kind of my big focus. But when we got off stage, she ended up coming up and talking to me. And I don't really remember exactly what we talked about.
I don't remember exactly, but he had these download cards that he had made and he was selling. And I was just trying to get a foot in the door. I just wanted to talk to him. And so, you know, he showed me the card and I was like, yeah, how much are these? He was like $1. And I was like, okay, cool. I only have a $5. And so he said, yeah, I'll take the $5. Yeah. And I was like, I'll take my change. Like, and so to this day, like seven years later, he has not paid me my $4.
Oh my God.
Let it be put on record. But yeah, that definitely was, you know, that was the first investment.
Yeah, that was she those $4. That was the first investment.
He laughed.
The $4 like, are what launched this brand.
Yes, definitely. But no,
it was a seed money.
She just made me feel, so one thing you got to know about growing up in, growing up in the hood is that coffee is normal. Like coffee is normal. It's a ritual to be able to like be able to drink it. And Mama's Brew talked about this too, right? Where it's like being able to drink coffee is like almost like a sign of moving out of childhood. So it's a part of our community. My wife's family has a beautiful story about their connection with coffee and legacy and all of that. But for us, it's one of those things where like coffee shops were very much so like white things. You know what I mean? So a coffee shop was very much so different than going to a like just going to your house and drinking some Folgers. So coffee shops were kind of like a weird space where I always felt like the weird black guy in there. Because there just weren't other black people. But my wife, Renata, has always been just this big person who normalized being black in coffee spaces for me. So, like, our first date, I had been going to all these coffee shops. And at the time, I was very excited about going to coffee shops and trying to figure out who had the best espresso. Specifically, who had the best lattes with no flavoring. Because I was excited that I could, like, drink lattes with no flavoring. And so our first date, like she emailed me, we ended up talking back and forth and I was like, hey, do you like coffee? And she said, yes. And I was like, yo, I know a spot that has the best lattes in town, which I would never take anybody to that spot now. I'm so ashamed that I thought that was good espresso.
We won't even say the name.
No, don't say the name. But it, to me, her saying, as a black woman saying, yes, I'll go here with you. Yes, I'll experiment with you. Yes, I'll try this weird thing that you're into. Made me feel like it was okay to be black in that space. And she's just done that our whole marriage. Like, there's like, if Renata wasn't there, like, saying yes and like telling me that I'm not crazy and like normalizing these things, even before I knew coffee was historically black, like, my wife made it relationally black. You know what I mean? She made it safe to be black and like coffee, even if it was just like me and her, you know, like she never criticized me or questioned me or made me feel. And that's a thing, because it was like kind of socially deviant to be really, but I've always been a weirdo, you know, but like as a kid, you know, but like my wife made it so normal. And so like from there, then
he was wearing a trench coat when we met, and it was like July.
So. I was like really in my like indie rapper bag. Like I was skinny.
I thought
then.
It was so cute. I was like, oh, this guy is a cutie.
Yes. I was like all the way in my like weird indie, you know, blog rap bag. Like, yeah. It was like trench coats and backpacks and boots.
Committed.
And I don't know.
Where do you think that comes from, that like ability to like create comfort in a situation that could like potentially be uncomfortable? Like you mentioned, like by yourself, you were like, I'm not going to do this. But together, you're able to kind of create that sense of like, this is where I'm going to go here because this is where I want to go.
Well, I think for me, I was willing to do it. Like I was doing it, but I didn't feel like it was Black, if that makes sense. Like to me, it felt like me doing a weird thing that Black people don't do. But when my wife, and she can speak to what it is about her that gave her like a more inclusive vision of Blackness. But when my wife said, yes, I'll do this with you, it made me feel like, oh, this could be a community thing. It's not just something that weird, you know, Maurice likes. You know?
And so, I mean, kind of to preface the whole like $4 incident, like when I met him, he was a breath of fresh air. And so compared to some of the polluted air I had been breathing before. And so to meet him and to hear like these were the things that he was invested in, he was committed to, I was automatically in. Because those were the things that made him him. And so for me, I mean, it kind of comes from like how I was raised. My mom was always a big, like whatever I wanted to pursue, she was behind it. She was the biggest cheerleader in my entire life. And so, you know, I definitely learned that from her, but also just like understanding like this is what comes with him. And it's like a great package. It's not just like, you know, he's not just like saying, hey girl, I'll give you the world. Just, you know, like just coming with empty promises and, I don't know, just like this lame persona, but he was very much so a person of substance. And I was just like, man, like I want to invest in whatever makes you you. And so it made it easy. I was like, of course. I mean, and he at the same time invested in things at the time. I mean, and I still am. I think I actually am more now interested in directing.
Oh yeah, we got a music video dropping.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
We got a music video dropping tomorrow that we both kind of co-filmed, co-directed. But I was totally into just like playwriting and directing and all that kind of stuff, and he was very much so interested in that. And so on our first date, he pulled out his phone and turned on the song and said, hey, so what would you do to this song? Like what kind of video would you make from this song? And so we just kind of sat there and just like dreamed together. And that was our first time really talking to each other, like talking. And it was great because it was somebody who could dream with me. And so I think we both have been in a place since we've been dating, been in a place where we've been free to dream. And it makes, you know, it makes the things that we pursue that much more like worth it, you know, because it's like, you know, you have permission from the other person to do that. Like you don't even need the permission. Like that's just the standard.
Yeah.
Like we dream.
That's the norm.
You know, we are dreamers. Right. That's just what we do. So.
That's pretty powerful to be in a marriage, having this life that you've built for the two of you, and then having a family, and then being able to also be like, let's also put our creative pursuits in this together. I've worked for a lot of coffee shops where the owners are married, and that is never good. but it's so powerful to hear you two talk about like what about the two of you feeds into each other's like ability to dream and to pursue really interesting like creative endeavors. And I think that speaks a lot to the intentionality behind Coffee Black, which I want to get into in a moment. But Renata, I want to talk a little bit about your relationship with coffee and kind of how you grew up understanding coffee in your life.
So my biggest relationship with coffee was with my grandfather, so my maternal grandfather. And he drank coffee every day. I don't remember not seeing him drink coffee. And I learned recently as an adult that he had like a thermos that he would take with him to work. And he was actually a sanitation worker, which is, I'll get to that part of the story as well. But like he worked there and then he worked with there's a utility company that's a huge monopoly here in Memphis called MLG&W. And he worked there as well, which for that time frame was actually a good accomplishment for his family financially. But from my earliest remembrance of coffee, he would always have a cup of coffee that was completely white, like all the sugar, all the cream. Okay, not coffee black at all. And I would just look at it. I would just be just smelling the flavors wafting up to my nose. And I'm just like, can I have some of it? And every day he would give me a sip of his coffee, which is funny because you always hear, you know, how like in black culture, it's like coffee gonna stunt your growth.
Yeah, it's gonna
coffee,
make you short.
It'll either make you short or make you black, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And so there was always this fear in the back of my mind that I would be short, which I'm not sure at all. 5'9½.
Short and real black.
That I'll be a little raisin person or something, but, yeah, he would always let me try it. And it was never a weird thing. Like, and I feel like my dad drank coffee for a little bit because he always worked night shifts. And so, yeah, it wasn't ever like this weird thing. I will say as I've gotten older, the experience as a black woman in specifically in coffee spaces is way different from experiencing that with my grandfather. Yeah. You know, like... Mm-hmm. It's not as pleasant. Like people don't offer you sips of their finest lattes or their finest, you know, pour overs or whatever. It's very much so if you come in, who do you know? Who are you with? Like, yeah. If I'm with my husband, people sometimes acknowledge my presence.
Oh, we get to check folks though.
And he definitely, because for me, I don't feel the need ever to prove myself. So if anybody ever asks me something, I will answer. But you're never going to see me walking into a room, like forcing people to see me, because I believe if you are something, you don't ever have to tell somebody. Like if you're in my mind, if you're a sophisticated person or if you're intelligent, you don't ever have to say out loud, I am intelligent or I am valuable, because you are. It's just who you are. And so with that belief in mind, I'm not going to walk in and beg somebody to talk to me. Mm. So for me, my experience has been, okay, I'm going in here. You're not saying anything. You don't get my presence. Like,
yeah.
You lose that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but it makes for an experience where it's not united. Like, we don't get to experience it together for a while. He would say, hey, you want to go in? I'm like, no.
Yes, you would go.
And I was like, no, I want to go in there. Are they going to say something to me this time?
Yeah, that people just wouldn't even speak.
People just wouldn't speak, or they would come straight up to him and have a conversation. And, you know, I'm just standing there. And there were so many times where if I'm standing here and you guys are having a conversation, I would just walk away. I mean, because again, and I'm not, and I know there are certain, like, there are other types of women who probably would be like, well, just say something. And I get it. But for me, just like, choosing which battles I'm gonna fight, and that's not one of them.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't, because we definitely have had some conversations since then.
I've just had to like literally tell people, hey, this is my wife Renata.
Hey, this is a person.
Like in the middle of a conversation, be like, yo, you didn't speak to my wife.
Yeah. To the point now that some people awkwardly are like, hey, Renata, how are you doing today?
Which is a whole other problem.
It's a whole other conversation, because there's this fear that I'm going to just like go off on them, which is very possible. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know where my attitude may take me. I'm very much so an angry black woman, but I am. And people are always like, I don't want to be that. I'm like, why? You right. can be angry,
come on,
but I'm not a perpetually angry black woman,
yeah.
But I'm an angry black woman. I'm a happy black woman. I'm a sad, you know? So anyway, yeah, I think it's just been such an interesting world, because it's very much so, you know how there's the whole James Brown, the James Brown song is a man's world. But it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl, which is hilarious. That song has always been funny to me, but like, that's how coffee feels to me.
Yeah.
It's very much so like, this is a coffee man's world, which is a whole different, you know, it's like coffee nerds and snobs. It's like, y'all realize y'all are like,
really lame.
Y'all like,
yeah.
Y'all are kind of nerdy, but you got your own world. I appreciate it. But that doesn't mean you can like write somebody out. Like, you're doing the same thing,
yep.
You know? So,
right.
So all that say, like, it's been a journey from sharing, you know, that full of sugar, full of cream coffee with my granddaddy to like these third wave shops that claim to be, you know, the best
inclusive,
right. You know, we're forward about thinking. All these different people's rights, but you don't treat those people, you know, you don't treat those people like you are. So it's been an interesting journey. I think we're now at, like, I'm at a place where I don't immediately get annoyed when he says, hey, I would like to go to a coffee shop for a date.
Yeah.
You know, I'm finally at a place where I don't get triggered, and I don't, because like I said, like, there are some people that I'm just like, and I think I said something to one guy, like, so were you going to say anything to me? I can't remember what it was, but it was just kind of like, you know, or if I go in and I ask for something because I generally, at this point, I can't drink coffee because I'm getting old, and so it makes my heart palpitate.
Yeah. Old and fine, though.
I was like, I don't know how.
I was supposed to say, I think the two of you are younger than me, so...
I was like, I don't know how old you are, but if you are close to my age, you can relate that after that.
Yeah, that's true.
It just kind of starts going to get... Yeah, but so yeah, whenever I go to get him things, I have to validate it by saying, oh yeah, I'm getting this for Bart.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just at a point where I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Right. You going to remember me. You know?
And then the other problem where then people start trying to overcompensate because like right. I literally... Can we curse on this? I don't
know if you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, so it's not cursing. Anyway, I just be having to check niggas like, yo, like, you gonna speak to my wife? And then people overcompensate, and then they try to be her best friend, which is another, like, that's if you know my wife. She's just like, I don't really know you like that. I just wanted you to speak. Please don't come over here and talk to me for 20 minutes about espresso extraction or, like, the latest Beyonce album. Like, I don't want to talk to you about that, you know? But it's, I feel like unless people don't know genuine. How to interact with black women, especially in coffee shops. Like, they just don't know what to do.
So it's like being at a safari, like on a safari, and you encounter a lion that is dangerously close to your vehicle you're in, and you're trying to figure out, do we drive away or do we stay calm and drive away? That's how I feel like when I'm in it. They're like, oh my gosh, there's an exotic animal. You know, it's annoying. And I think, like I said, like these conversations that we've had, and then there's some, like one shop that my husband worked at, like there was never an issue.
They were cool.
They were super cool. It was,
but they were skaters though.
I was like, it was a coffee / skater shop, and everybody was like super chill, just like very respectful.
You did come in there a lot.
And I came in there a lot because people were very just respectful. Normal. Yeah, they
like,
just
it wasn't people were humans before they were like
before they were literally
coffee
anything
professionals.
Else.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I feel like
even in the skater, like in there in the space for skaters, like nobody ever looked. I took the boys in there to watch them on the ramps. And nobody would ever look at us like we didn't belong, ever. They would always be like, and even one point, there was a guy who was like, you guys might want to go, because they had music blasting, and they had like cuss words in it. And one guy was like, you might want to go into like this room that's back here at Soundproof. You know, like actually looking out for us, which is a whole different level, you know, so.
Yeah, I feel like you said so many interesting things in that story you told, and there are two that I kind of want to talk about. The first one being that, like, you both co-own this business together, and yet people are talking to Bart maybe more than they are to you, Renata, which is like a real thing that happens. Like, I my partner is a coffee professional as well, and so often, like, not to put him on blast, but like. I'm smarter than he is. And so sometimes I'm like, why are you talking to him? Like,
so, I've had so I mean, many... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, you're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, for us, it's less about... It's established which is smarter, okay? There's not a conversation.
Yeah, my wife is definitely smarter.
Okay, yeah. But I think we've kind of hit a flow. It's less of like who's on the front. Because for me, a couple things, like I like doing design. I do design for our coffee bags, for our apparel, things like that. I mean, like whatever you see on social media, like if you see it, I did it. With the exception of maybe a couple designs.
If it's a Helvetica font.
Yeah, if it's
I got one font.
If it's Helvetica,
he did it. Yeah. If it's anything a little bit more creative, yeah. even just slightly more creative, it's probably me.
Yeah.
So I do that. And then I like to do like behind the scenes. So since we've had kind of like an uptick in sales and all that, I've definitely been on fulfillment, like customer service, human resources, which yeah. is a whole new world. So yeah, that's a different thing. And then also saying, I just remembered that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So she does so many. Yeah. Why is she teaching me how to sing? So any like Coffee Black music you hear where I'm singing, it's Jelly, my wife, coaching me. Any like harmonies or like any other melodic work that's had like Renata does up. And she does a lot of songwriting too. People don't know that. Yeah, yeah. But like, we write songs together. Like, I never really finish it. Because whenever I write, I freestyle. So then I just go to her and be like, was this good? What should we change?
Really, the flow that we kind of hit is like Bart is like the face. Yeah. And he like, I mean, because I'm not going to take away the fact that he's got words. So like this man, when we met, like the way he proposed to me, if I can go on a slight rabbit trail.
Go for it.
Very slight. I was teaching at a school. He came up. There's so much more context to this. But we were in an auditorium and he started like freestyling about questions. This whole like this idea that questions show the vulnerable side of you, and like when you ask a question, you're really placing yourself in the position to be truly seen by this person because you're saying things that you may or may not know, and I don't know, something that was deep, and I was like, ooh, okay. And you know, he just made this whole long like monologue. I mean, I'm blanking out, mom brain, but so he goes in this long thing, and then like he gets something out of his backpack and jumps down to where I was in the audience. I'm the only person, only person. This was during parent-teacher conferences, it might is. I add, yep. So I don't know if there were parents in my room, but he jumps down and gets down on both knees and says, will you marry me? And I was like, are you for real? Are you serious? You know, I was like, I thought you were just doing one of your normal, like,
random,
you know, so he's got the words, and I'm completely fine with that. And I think for him, as far as it pertains to coffee, talk to Bart. Yes. As far as it pertains to like, even like, well, I definitely coffee. I think we've had a lot of opportunities recently to talk about, just racial injustices and like, you know, kind of some systemic, things that have been more on the front lines, here in America recently. And those are things we talk about literally all the time. Like, right. To go back to the conversation about my grandfather. So he was a sanitation worker during the sanitation strike of 1963. And so he, when Dr. King heard about the strike, he came down and joined in the efforts with them. And that's been like a really big part of my family heritage, and family's huge. Like, family is number one for me. Like, that's a big deal for me. When I met Bart, it was just like, this is top priority. It was understood by both of us. Like, yeah. This is, you know, family's priority. And so we were passed down this heritage. Like, we did protests literally our entire lives. We were celebrating. We've been celebrating Juneteenth since we were like 7 or 8. Like, you know, we did Kwanzaa when we were younger, like all that type, those types of things that are now considered quote unquote woke. But it's just part of, you know, it's just a part of who you are. And I think my grandfather was a huge part of that. Instilling that in his family. And so, you know, for us, that's something that I love to get a chance to talk about. And my husband and I really get, like, when we're talking about it, you get a chance to kind of get a peek into like where that was rooted and kind of like how that's impacting the ways that the direction that we're moving our family. And you know, the values that we're building based off of that. And so Yeah, that's why, you know, if you're gonna hear, and I also just prefer not to be in front of camera.
Like, she would just be going off with, like, my wife is someone who I just feel like speaking to her is a privilege, and she's so annoyed by so many people in coffee.
I'm just annoyed in general. I went up on a police officer one time.
Yes, and I was like, baby, gonna die.
It was just something random, and I sometimes, technical difficulties. Sometimes I don't know what may come out of my mouth, because I can be super chill. Like, I'm super chill, but if I feel triggered or if I feel like attacked, like, this is something that's very important to me. And so if I feel attacked or I feel like somebody is being, you know, unjustly attacked or targeted, there's no stopping me.
Yeah,
there's no stopping me.
It's interesting to hear, like, how something that I never connected with, and, like, this is maybe a little bit going backwards on something you said earlier, was this idea that in a lot of cultures that, like, coffee is just, like, so much part of, like, your existence, your growing up. And I say this even for myself. Like, I'm Cuban, so, like, coffee is everywhere in my family. And even thinking about, like, bringing my grandfather to, like, a specialty coffee shop, I'd be like, he would have no fucking clue, like, what's going on here, because this is not tailored for him. And yet coffee is such a rite of passage for me for growing up. Like, same thing, like, the first taste you get of coffee is, like, you as an adult. And I was definitely told for a long time, if I drank coffee, it would stunt my growth, which I'm 5'8", so
I don't know.
it's good to hear that it's, like, a thing that apparently,
it's a thing.
We all know. But I think that's so interesting that, like, so much of, like, the way that we consume coffee isn't reflected in the way that we actually, like, project coffee on, like, the specialty side. So, like, at what point did you take all these experiences and decide, like, okay, like, we're making a coffee brand. Like, this is what we're doing.
I think for me, those experiences with my wife, like, they were kind of happening at the same time as me. For me, I've always been just, like, odd. So, like, being really into, you know, things that just weren't normal to be into in my neighborhood. And I guess, like, my homies in college used to call me, like, the hood hipster. And so contextually, like, I definitely grew up in Memphis and in the hood in Memphis, but also was just on a regular basis would be, like, off doing things that other people weren't doing for multiple reasons. Number one is, like, the things that other people were doing, like, a lot of times could lead to you dying. And I wasn't, like, my mama wasn't going to let me do that. And then two, I personally was like, I don't know if I want to participate in this. And then secondly, I think this is just kind of how I'm created. Like, this is how God made me, is, like, just a weird person. And I think it took somebody like my wife to be like, you know what? You might have something going on. Like, that actually might be worth, like, investing in. So my weird obsession with coffee, I think meeting my wife, God bringing us together, was really it turning into, like, a weird specific interest of mine to, like, now this is a part. This is reconnecting specialty coffee back to a family, and then back to a community of families, and then back to a larger, like, race and ethnic group, right? And a social political group. And connecting coffee's well-being to all those things. So the resources and the experiences I was having in coffee, much like when I went to college, like, I realized, like, wow, there's this wealth of resources and experiences over here that are not present in my family, in my neighborhood, and in my larger community and ethnic group. And so I was like, yo, why is that? You know, why is there this dissonance between these things? And as we, you know, did research, we came upon, you know, kind of like the well-known fact that at this point that coffee is Black, right? It comes from a Black nation, and then it was proliferated into many Black and it was proliferated into many Black and Brown communities through colonialism. And so, like, then I realized, okay, for what me, my wife and I both know about how racism works, how colonialism works, is that it dehumanizes things. It strips identity away from things and then recasts them or whitewashes them as indigenous to the colonizer's culture, or anything valuable becomes synonymous with the culture of the colonizer. And so then, therefore, it causes the indigenous people to see a dissonance between themselves and their own resources. Right? And so, like, we're, like, seeing a dissonance between ourselves and coffee, you know, even to the point to where we say, don't drink too much coffee, it'll make you black. You know what I mean? It'll literally make your skin darker, which we also internalize this idea of it being bad. So, like, for us, these things obviously are idiosyncrasies that need to be rectified. And so we're like, we gotta, like, there has to be something we can do about this. And so in my own identity and in our own family, in our family unit, we have seen coffee become very normalized because I'm a rapper, because my wife's a singer, because we're both educators, because we're both people of faith, because we're both in our actual community. We moved into the hood together. We talked about that on our first day, too. I was like, look, we ain't gonna have no big house. I want to move in the hood and do work. She was like, oh, yeah, I already planned on doing that. Again, my wife is smarter than family. Me. She was like, I'm already doing that. So, like, I thought I had found this really cool idea. But, like, so, like, it was a part of our integral as we're, like, mentoring young black and black women and black and brown women and black and brown men and discipling people and, like, raising our children and working on education reform. We're making pour overs at the house. And, well, I'm making pour overs and trying to convince my wife to drink the pour over. do you taste these notes? And yeah, at the same time as, like, I'm recording raps in my house and listening to the new Kendrick Lamar album. And, like, all these things are happening in the same space. And it's like, wow, this is really beautiful. What if we could proliferate this in other households and in other spaces in our community where it's not something that has to be seen from the colonizer's lens, but something that can be reclaimed and then reintroduced back just as a part of our life.
Yeah, that's what it actually is.
As what it actually is and what it should be. And I think my wife touched on something really beautiful. She was like, our marriage has been built on dreaming. I think Renata, even at that show, I'm at this show trying to, like, get my little dream out. I'm trying to, like, live my life as a weird indie rapper in the middle of a city that has a ton of, like, gangster rap, and also trying to, like, get my little gangster rap vibe on in the middle of a bunch of weird hipsters who are like, we don't really get, you know, what's going on with this dude either. Like, why is he so aggressive? So, like, and my wife sees that and gives me room and permission to do that. And then that initiates a cycle where we do this for each other. And this is the reason why we do this, because at the end of the day, this is the experience we have with our creator, with God, is that he's giving us permission to be who we were meant to be and not to have to conform to other people's quote unquote sugar and cream. You know what I mean? And so just having the notes we have and being celebrated for those. And so, like, go ahead, Beth.
I mean, in that when you create, it's, I always think of being made with purpose.
Yeah.
I know some people are of the thought that, you know, there is no purpose. There
right.
is, I mean, which they're entitled to that. But I think in creating and in having a creator, the purpose that we're made with is what we should therefore make with. So
yeah.
Like, we are there, we are made with purpose, so we should therefore make with purpose. And so the things that we do, the conversations that we have, the art that we take part in and create should have purpose and have a deep meaning and build into the identity of the people that it is for.
Yeah, and I think specifically we touched on this earlier, but having a why for what you're doing and seeing, like, okay, we're doing coffee not just to tell people, hey, come try this coffee,
yeah,
but we're doing coffee with the reasoning in mind that, oh, this is for you to reclaim and then use as a resource to achieve your purpose in your life.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, this has a utility for you that we have identified.
It's so funny. I think it's such a needed... That's such a needed ideology for people to claim or to really commit to understanding, is that, and let me get my thoughts together. In thinking about the way that I've talked to other people about Coffee Black, because I've had conversations with white people who are just like, what is Coffee Black? Is it just for black people? Is this, you know, there's so many questions about you know, like, can I be a part of this if I'm not Black, which has been a huge question. And the question, the answer is always yes. One, because we will always take your money. Your money does not have to be Black. It has to be green or digital. But no, I think it's this idea of people understanding inherently who they are.
Yeah.
And that overall, people don't. Like, I've had conversations with white people, and it's kind of a weird conversation to explain to them, like, you know, we're reclaiming our heritage as Black people. Like, coffee is Black. And in that, you can find things in your heritage that you can actually claim that's actually yours. Yeah. That doesn't include lands, that's people, foods, and cultures, if you get the drift.
Yeah.
And so I've honestly had, and the funny thing is I've had a he's probably like 42-year-old white man with two kids tell me no one has ever told me to basically claim my heritage.
Right.
Like, he's like, nobody ever gave me permission to do that, which is sad. Yeah. You know, that's sad that you don't get to experience that. But I think in what we're building is a new norm, and it can apply. Are we talking to white people in you know, specifically in that? No. But
it's a principle that we want.
But it's a principle. It's a principle. And I think so many people are just wandering and just like, I have no earthly clue, you know, I have no earthly clue what I'm doing. And I've never had permission. Nobody's ever told me. I just inherited this stolen land. I inherited these stolen people. I inherit, you know, and never got a chance to tell. And this isn't me saying like, woe is white people, but I'm saying like, that's the issue we're facing right now, is that we have a group, we have so many groups of people who never understood your identity is not wrapped up in these possessions that you have, or these, even this idea that you have of who you are is warped, you know? And I think in having these conversations and in talking about Coffee Black, I've gotten so many opportunities to tell, I mean, it's been great talking to Black people about it, because they're like, oh man, that's all right, you know, because people know this is, coffee's been a part. Their grandma drinks coffee every morning, most likely. You know, everybody has somebody who drinks coffee, and it's so cool to see this is something I can claim in a world of things, especially as a Black person, that I'm being told was never mine, or I don't deserve it, or I need to just go back to wherever I came from because I'm in the way, or I just, you know, I was never meant to be a part of this narrative. It's so cool to hear something that this was actually meant to be a part of our narrative.
Yeah.
And like, we're taking it back and we are treating it as so, and we're moving forward with it. Like, and there's no stopping it, you know? And I think if there were so many, I think there are, I think it's growing now, and seeing kind of like the waves across the world, but just like, if there were more things that we could claim, that we would reclaim that were originally ours, and not in this, like, not in this Gollum, like obsessive, almost like to your own detriment, but in this way that builds up a hope that was lost in a people. I mean, from the existence of a country, you know, to start rebuilding that and be unapologetic about it. I mean, I think it's unnecessary. It's a necessary conversation.
Yeah, I think this goes back a lot to what kind of one of the foundational stories that you told about asking questions and how vulnerable it is to actually ask a question. But at the same time, to ask a question and also almost admits to like, I don't know this thing that's happening around me. Let me question what's happening around me and say like, hey, why is this way? Why is that way? I also wrote that down just because it touched me really deeply as a person who interviews people. I'm like, oh, that's why I like asking questions. Because I like that process. But it also just kind of speaks to this idea of like centering yourself in your own space. And maybe I'm getting a little bit weird, but like we were talking about earlier, people open up coffee shops with no intention, and it's because they don't know how to ask questions about the world around them, because they've never really had to.
Come on now, you better preach. Come
on. I mean, I'm learning this from you, so.
Yeah. That's such a great way to explain that.
From a wise person.
Because people, okay, so white people ask me all the time, yo, how can we, like, how can specialty coffee? This is probably my least favorite interviewer question because it censors whiteness and because it's just like, I think it's the opposite of what they intend when they're trying, because it's trying to be a very humble question, but it mm-hmm. comes across extremely arrogant. How can specialty coffee be more welcoming for Black people? Or how can specialty coffee, how can we get more Black people in specialty? Like some iteration of that question. Mm-hmm. I hate that question. Mm-hmm. The reason why I hate that question is because that question assumes that
Black people are not a part of specialty coffee.
Yeah, and even yeah. worse, it assumes that Black people need specialty coffee.
To be, yeah.
You need Black people.
Yeah.
Because you obviously you went over there and stole something from them. So you must need, like, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
I mean, we see it in the commercials, right? So they'll be selling something as dumb as like deodorant, and there's a hip hop beat in the background.
Yeah.
Sprite commercials. LeBron James is on a Sprite commercial. Like, you need Black, your product does not work without the products of Black people.
Or without Black neighborhoods.
Without literally the culture of Black people. Yes. Like the whole livelihood of a Black person, your product, your livelihood depends on it. And it has since the beginning.
Right.
So for you to say, hey, we're doing fine over here because we obviously created this entire system on
we're
our
doing
own
fine
backs.
Over here with your whole culture.
Right, on our own backs, and we play our own music in our coffee shops.
Yes.
And, you know, it's really, we have graffiti walls that reflect European culture.
Yeah, it's like, yo, if I think the a much better stance is saying, like, yo, how can we be in community with people? How can we be in honest and authentic community with people who we've already, like, disrespected and stolen from? Like, I think that's the question. Like, people go into Black neighborhoods already. They just don't ask questions when they show up. They just show up and take. Like, people use Black products already. They just don't ask questions when they do it. They just show up and take.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That reminds me, we were in, my husband and I did a program. And there was a conversation at one point about the same question, about making it more welcoming. And it was the whole people of color thing, which I feel really weird about.
Yeah.
So the conversation was just like, what are some things? And there were very aesthetic solutions to some of the questions that I was like, whatever. But ultimately, my question, and I don't want to say too much, but my question was, where's your heart towards Black people? We're not talking about colored people. Sorry, people of color. we're not talking about people of color. We're not talking about, you know, and while that is a conversation, your real question is, why don't Black people work in this space? That's your real question. Mm-hmm. And my real question to you, person, is why don't you love Black people?
Yeah.
Where is your heart towards Black people? And this person said that question had never been phrased to them, ever. Like, it had never been presented to them. And the issue with it is not that it's never been, I'm sure there are thousands and millions upon millions of people who that question has never been presented to, but when your main, the main population that you're serving is Black and brown people, and no one has ever said, hey, before you start serving these Black and brown people, where's your heart towards serving these same Black and brown people?
Yeah.
As the leader, as the creator or whatever. And the fact that hadn't been a question, and you hadn't previously had conversations with people of color before you even got to this point, you know, and that it just presumes so much, to say that, you know, this, we, it's almost like, an affirmative action conversation,
mm-hmm.
an afterthought, like a, you know,
yeah.
not necessarily like, it's almost like a seat at the table versus, well, let me come to your table that you're building.
Right.
Instead of you have to meet me at my table. Just realize that other people already have supplies. Like, there are so many people mm-hmm. who have their own supplies.
And you keep going over and taking their supplies.
And you keep taking their supplies.
Right.
I I feel bad because I'm like, I have 100 different things I want to talk about, but I also want this episode to be a length that is digestible because we could keep going for a while. But before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to talk about or you'd want people to know about the two of you?
Man, I definitely feel like what I would say to people is, like, I think community is essential, and I'm not sure, like, what type of community is essential for the work, but specifically when you're doing the work of seeking to do, like, liberative work, like liberation work, I think community is essential prior to doing the work, and that, like, realizing who we are supposed to be as a person and, like, realizing that in community with another human being, I think is really essential, because, like, if we are not experiencing liberation ourselves, trying to then replicate that process on a community scale, I think is, and I think at the end of the day, it's healing, right? Like, if you're not going through the process of healing, I think it makes it really difficult to go then and teach other people how to liberate and heal themselves if you're not experiencing that connecting and reconnectivity on a microcosm. And I think, like, we just live in a world where we do a lot of social media activism. Like, there's a lot of, like, tweeting about things and canceling people and hashtags. And I think there's very little work of actually rebuilding real communities. You know what I mean? Like, actually going about the process of restoring humanity's connection and destiny within a localized space, like these five people. What is our common purpose, and how can we achieve that together? You know what I mean?
Right. And how and you two really kind of embody that in a way, just by talking about, like, how the foundation of your relationship works. It seems like there's, like, a lot of safety and a lot of liberation just in that, and, like, this is the bond that we've established between the two of us, and, like, look how much freedom that's kind of given.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why community is important, to establish the work that you're already doing. I think to kind of piggyback to what my husband was saying, when he mentioned, hey, this might be the way we live, that wasn't new news to me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to be a new lifestyle to me. I was already, you know, I was already about that life. And so we weren't everything to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people depend on, or they're waiting for, that person to be their quote unquote completion. I mean, we complement each other.
Yeah.
And there are some ways that I have found healing in our relationship from past relationships or from past wounds, but he's not the completion of me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people miss that, looking for that even in the work that they're doing, and they miss it. And so either you miss the person or you miss the work. And I think something that we were even talking to one of our friends about the other day is, like, in seeking that person or in that work that you're doing, do the work, be faithful to do the work, and see who's doing the work with you. And that's who you mm-hmm. partner with. And that can be a partner as just, like, a business partner, that can be a husband, that can be just a partner, that can be a friend, that can be a love interest.
But it's some type of community.
But it's a community, and it didn't depend on just you. Like, you already were doing work. You already had a community. And I think we both came into this work having had prior exposure, but also just, like, having a passion for that, like, mm-hmm. for people. And for identity and heritage, and just knowing, like, your value as a person. We both came in, we already had that. Like, that was basic, you know, that was just the bottom level. And so having that, it made it a lot easier to just, like, transition into the work that we've started to do now. Not even started, mm-hmm. and we're continuing right now.
Yeah.
This is not the beginning. We've been doing it for a while.
Thanks.
Well, I hope people listen to this and, I don't know, think about themselves, I guess. That's like a weird way to phrase it, but something that I feel that you both touched on is just, like, you both had this deep sense of self, or at least a sense of self enough to, like, see yourself in the world, ask questions, and kind of, like, root yourself in what was happening around you. And I think it's really easy to just kind of like move through the world without asking questions and not really know like who you are as a person, which feels like an attack on everybody listening. But I think listening to this made me feel like I need to it's so powerful to just like know yourself and start really simply and just like really think like, what am I about? Like, what am I working towards? And like, what world have I built around me? And is it what I want? And just asking mm-hmm. questions and being vulnerable is really powerful. So thank you for both being on the show and thank you for being so candid and honest. I love this conversation. I want to keep having it. We will probably keep talking after I stop recording. But before we do that, is there anything you want to plug or promote or just anything that we should be watching out for?
Yeah, keep your eyes tuned. We have really missed, like when we talk about really doing the work, I think one of the things when we talk about this liberatory experience, like my wife has kind of like, she's our breadwinner right now. So I've been since December really working on Coffee Black. Since the school that we helped start closed. And so my wife has had to do that, but she's actually in the process of like feeling like she wants to pursue her specific like graphic design and calligraphy again. Mm-hmm. And so be on the lookout for Brown Girl Lettering and more products, more posts from her. Go follow her. She's super dope, way smarter than me. So if you like anything I say, it would be better coming from my wife's mouth. And then also, we have we've really missed also being able to create around coffee in community, and create community around coffee, in our specific communities. And so we're looking at launching, a virtual version of the Brew Up experiences that we've done. And if you follow us, you're probably familiar with that, but it's like mm-hmm. a community coffee cipher where we, kind of build and explore culture and art together. And so that's going to be launching. We're having our first demo one with some friends from Chicago in August. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Tomorrow is our music video.
Yes.
Our second video that we shot. And this one we have some new tech. And yep. So we were kind of nerding out. I really enjoyed it. That'll be coming out. What time is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 11 a.m.
11 a.m. Central.
So by the time people listen to this, it'll be out.
Yep. I think, are we doing a watch party?
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah. It's the Anyhow music
and video. It's a great video. It's got some of our friends from down in Atlanta. Milan Cradle is the featured artist on there. And then my sister, myself, and then our kids are on there. Yes. And it's so cute. And Milan's wife, Olivia, is on there. Shout out.
Grandma's in there.
My grandma, my mom. So anyway, yeah, it's a great, it kind of gives a peek into, you know, some of the
legacy
that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that's tomorrow. And that's of awesome. Course, coffeeblack.com.
Yep.
Thanks again for taking time to talk to me.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
That was Renata Henderson and Bartholomew Jones of Coffee Black. The Coffee Black podcast is one of the most informative and interesting coffee podcasts out there. So please find the show and subscribe, listen more than once. I've listened to all three episodes so far a number of times. And you can find out more about Coffee Black, including how to order their signature coffee, Guji Main, by visiting coffeeblack.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.